Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
And a very nice hello to all of our listeners today. This is Maxine Marcellini, and I'm so glad you've joined us. My co-host Jeannie won't be with us today. She had another appointment to attend to, but she would be one who would appreciate this program very much. She is a friend who is also a co-host, but is actively involved in an aging parent care. Her mom is living nearby. She had her in her own home for a while, and now they've got a care facility they've chosen for her. But she's actively involved in that whole time of life that so many of us are going through right now. My parents are all passed away at this point, but I have many, many friends who are struggling with the issues of aging parents and how to make the right decisions and what to do next, and to accommodate the parents' wishes as best they can, but at the same time keep them safe. So today's guest is Nancy Parker Brummett. She's the author of 6 books, and the last 2 have been focused on aging adults and those who care for them. Before writing Take My Hand Again, Nancy journeyed with her mother and her mother-in-law through their adventures in aging and earned a professional certificate in gerontology. She lives in Colorado Springs, Colorado, with her husband Jim and 2 office cats. You can find more information about her writing and speaking ministries at her website of nancyparkerbrummett.com. Welcome to the show today, Nancy.
Oh, thank you so much, Maxine. It's good to be with you.
You are on a topic that really is touching a lot of people that I know, and I guess in some ways we call this population the sandwich generation, the sandwich between the younger population of their own kids and grandkids and the aging population with their parents. So what got you started in helping and aging, in writing to aging parents, number one, and how did you begin your own journey into that?
Well, I was involved in caring for my mom, who lived in Tennessee, and I live in Colorado, so I learned a lot about trying to care from a distance, and I have so much empathy for people who have to decide, should I go now? How long should I stay? And, of course, last-minute airline tickets are extremely expensive, so that can have a lot of challenges involved with it. But then my mother-in-law lived near us, so I was really more involved hands-on with her. And they both passed away within 7 months of one another. And as a writer, sometimes you go through a season of life where you think, oh, my goodness, I've learned all this. I have all this experience. Now what am I going to do with it? I don't need it anymore. And so you think, okay, then I'll just write a book about it. And I also took a gerontology class because I was just interested in the more academic side. So I did that for a year, and I interviewed a lot of friends who'd been caring for their parents and got their perspectives, and that became Take My Hand Again.
And now you're here for us to be able to glean from what you have gone through and from your experience learning.
Well, I hope so. I just would occasionally run into people who just found out that these roles were reversing and they were going to need to be taking care of their aging parent. And it was scary. I mean, so I wanted the book to be like the friend or neighbor that they wished they had who had been through it before them.
So what kind of advice would you give them when they first realize that mom or dad is no longer to be the one who's there for them, and now it's their turn, as I call passing the baton to the generation below that parent? How do you get them to walk into the roles reversing?
I think it takes a lot of patience and a lot of love and as much laughter as you can interject in the situation as well, and an awful lot of prayer. And in my experience, even when there can be a lot of denial, either with the aging adults or the aging parents, in the heart of hearts, people know there needs to be a change. You know, I mean, if an older person falls and you find out about it, they've probably fallen several times and not told anyone. You know, so in their heart, they know they may need a different level of care. But it just takes patience, and I think it takes sensitivity and putting yourself in your parents' shoes and realizing how we're going to feel in the not-too-distant future when our children sit us down and say, we don't think this is working for you anymore. So, and also looking at facts. I mean, what are the facts? Just saying, Dad, Mom, let's look at the facts here of what's been happening, and trying to get some objective information from maybe their personal physician, maybe their pastor, people who see them out and about and who have different levels of information that you can all take into account before you make any decision.
So what role did you have in helping your mom? You talk about it being more long distance. What kind of a role did you do in the long distance relationship? Because before my mom passed away, I was Oregon, she was Arizona. So it was very difficult for me to be
right
there very much at the time either. So my sister-in-law, a lot of that fell to her.
Right. And my two sisters were in Tennessee with my mom. And I think what happens, you know, I had to be careful not to be the sister that flew in from out of town. I was there a few days, but I suddenly had all these ideas about what needed to be happening with my mom and then fly home. I mean, especially if you're talking about a different level of transportation, because that falls to them. That impacts their daily schedules, not mine, you know. So,
exactly.
But I also think that the people who are there, who are with the aging parent more consistently, may not notice the changes that those of us who just come in every few months might be able to pick up on. Because it's more gradual, if you see what I mean. So
that's a really good point that you're making there, because you might be able to point something out that they've just sort of taken as a kind of a routine path of life that's happening.
Right. And so I think when you get the clearest picture is when all those people can say, well, I've observed this and I've observed that, and you sort of put all your notes together and then agree. I mean, it's really important for siblings to at least present a united front to their aging parent and not cause more stress by infighting and disagreeing about what should be done. And I've had an awful lot of respect for my sisters and all the time that they were giving, so sensitivity there, too, is important.
So did you actually find a care facility for your mom and your mother-in-law?
I wasn't as involved in choosing the one for my mom. She had friends who had already moved into assisted living, and that is an excellent resource for people. You know, you can say, Mom, would you like to go meet Helen and have lunch at her assisted living? I'd be happy to take you meet with Helen, you know. And then while they're there, if they take a tour, so much the better, but it just makes it feel less scary and not quite as strange if they've been there to visit friends. And that was the case with my mom. She kind of had in the back of her mind, well, I don't want to do this, but if I ever do, I think I'll go to this place, you know. So that helped a whole lot. And with my mother-in-law,
thought of it.
Yes. With my mother-in-law, we really did have to do the research ourselves and visit several different places. And in the book, Take My Hand Again, I always recommend that go to the appointment with the marketing person, get the tour, but then if possible, drop in other times when they're not expecting you and see if you can chat with people who work there or residents who live there and get a real good feel for what's really happening there, because sometimes you don't get the whole picture just by looking at the brochure.
I agree. So were you satisfied with the care your parent received? Because you hear terrible things in the news every now and then about a facility that's going good.
Yes. One thing I learned is that I think there's a window of opportunity, and oftentimes I think older people are in such denial or are so afraid of the change that they need to move, but they don't move at a time when they can still be active and enjoy the other people at the in the community and enjoy the activities that are offered. And my mom did that. She was elected Valentine Queen, and she went to all the dances, and she played bridge, and she went to the church services they held on Sunday, and she just really enjoyed it. My mother-in-law had been more resistant, and by the time she moved in, she had pretty bad macular degeneration and felt like when she met somebody, she couldn't remember if she'd met them before because she couldn't see that well. And, you know, it just was not as positive of an experience for her, although I think the place that we chose was every bit as good. It just has to do with that window of opportunity to get the most out of it, I think.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I know that became an issue for our family was my mother had put herself in a nursing facility, assisted living facility, in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
She decided she
uh-huh.
wanted to be in that, and part of it was she had a friend, I think, that was there, and she wanted the
sure.
bingos and the music entertainment, and she had a social life that could happen there. And so she
right.
enjoyed that part of it. But what we found to be a problem was having those end-of-life papers on file with them rather than the family making a decision. And one of our issues was she'd had a stroke, and she was attempting to come out of that stroke. We saw that she was trying to connect with us but couldn't fully do it. And
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't help her because there were papers on file. She wasn't ready to die just then. So my
yes.
brother intervened, and he says, "May I see those papers?" And the nurse brought them, and he says, and he tore them up in front of her, and he said, "You get help, or we will go find a place to take her ourselves." And so
right.
they did start helping her at that point, and she ended up coming out of that stroke and lived another several months or maybe a year and a half. And then she had another one, and so the family made the decisions then. We were able to talk about it. We were very concerned about having papers on file where they literally weren't going to give her anything.
Oh, goodness.
And that was very frightening, very frightening.
Well, that is frightening, and that, I guess that just comes down to asking all the questions you can before you're in a situation like that and using your physician as a resource and other families as a resource to find out exactly what you need to have on file and what you may not want to participate in. But that was a bad situation, my goodness.
Yeah, that was a big wake-up call for me as to what
oh,
those
sure.
things might really mean. So
Sure.
For myself now, I don't give them that much full permission. I want the family to maybe make some decisions for me if I'm unable.
Yes. Yes.
So what was the most difficult part of helping your mom or your mother-in-law?
Well, with my mom, of course, it was the distance. She had the personality of, oh, no, everything's fine, you know, very optimistic, which served her well all of her almost 93 years. So I can't, I'm not unhappy about that. But it kept me from knowing how she really was doing. And that's why it was important to stay in touch with my sisters. And with her, it was not so much physical as she became withdrawn and depressed, which really was not her personality at all, but can happen as we age. And my sisters noticed it, that she didn't want to go out and do things with them. And finally, her physician said, she just needs more socialization. She needs more people around her all the time. And so that was a pretty telling situation. And for my mother-in-law, it was just just constantly trying to be on top of. Yes, she was in a care facility, but you know what I learned, Maxine, is that any of them are only as good as the people who come in and out of those rooms, the lowest level employees, the aides. And you can't pay for or hire a caring heart. I mean, they either have it or they don't. And
why is that ever true? Wow.
Yes. And so that I think was the biggest challenge. Yeah, my mother-in-law, I told you before, she couldn't see very well. And she was a woman who always took the time and effort to dress nicely. And I would go in to see her, and she'd have on a top and slacks that didn't even begin to match, you know. And she'd say, that was another reason she didn't want to go out to the dining room. She said, well, I don't know what I have on. What do I have on? And I would try so hard to put her clothes that matched together in the closet, and then I'd leave a couple inches and put another outfit. And I tried to make it as easy as I could, but it just didn't happen consistently because, there again, not everyone cared to make sure that she had that extra attention. So making friends, at least having one person on the inside that you feel like I will be honest with you and that you can share your frustrations with, I think is real important. And just constantly,
staff,
as I said before, yes, somebody on
staff.
Yes. And
that makes
and
sense.
To just drop by at different times. Go to some of the activities yourself. You know, see if they're really happening and if everything is going as it's supposed to. And the meals too, you know, share a meal now and then and see how the food is. And I think when you're in town, vigilance in and out is what's needed most, even at the best of care facilities.
I think my greatest concern with those facilities is the people who have no one that comes to see them.
Oh,
no one who's stopping by. I think
they're
incredibly vulnerable.
Yes, they really, really are. And not so much at assisted living, but especially in the nursing homes or the skilled nursing level, where they may not even be able to verbalize whether they're getting the care that they need or not. And, yes, I think in that situation, if that is happening with your parent and they live out of town, it's important to find a friend or a relative who will make those frequent visits or intermittent visits. And if not, you can hire an aging advocate or somebody to do that for you, because yes, that's the worst situation that no one would want for their parents.
Okay. Where does someone go to hire an advocate if they feel they need one?
Most communities have a center for aging or a senior center that offers resources, and you can find people through those community organizations. Even if you went online, in the back of the book I have a lot of resources listed, but even if you go online to an organization like ARP or, you know, AARP or some of the other senior organizations, they often have resources by state or by city so that you can find someone.
Would you tell our listeners a little bit about your blog? I've looked at your website, and it's really wonderfully done. You've got
thank you.
A deal of information there, but you do have a blog. How often can they hear from you on
the
blog?
Well, it's called Take My Hand Again, just like the title of the book. And I have two blogs going. The other one is Back Porch Break, and it's more just a lifestyle column that I used to write in the local newspaper. So that can be on anything. And then the blog, Take My Hand Again, deals with aging issues. And I still volunteer in an assisted living. And another book I wrote is called The Hope of Glory, and it's devotionals to use in senior settings. And so some of my information for the Take My Hand Again blog comes from that and from my interaction with a lot of the wonderful older people that I still get to interact with, even though my mom and mother-in-law are gone. And since we've had 4 graduations and a wedding, I can't say I've been very vigilant about getting those blog posts out, but I try to do them every week or so. So, and you can subscribe directly and get them into your inbox for free, of course. So anyone who's interested, that would be great.
No, that sounds wonderful. And it is a wonderful website. Listeners, we're talking with Nancy Parker Brummett of nancyparkerbrummett.com, and she really does have a lot of information for you to pick up on from her website, and she's very informative. And I know friends that are really struggling with this time of life right now. And one of the most difficult things is, for one of my friends in particular, is her mom will display anger and maybe even become accusatory because of her own health situations. It's not the mom she used to know. How do you process that?
That is heartbreaking, and even more so dementia, which there could be a little bit of dementia going on, and Alzheimer's, which is the form of dementia. And if that progresses to the point where not only might they be angry, but they may not even recognize you when you come to visit, I think that would be the most heartbreaking thing of all, and I have not experienced that personally. But from what I've read about advice to caregivers, and it's so important, again, sometimes we're very emotional as we need to be in this situation, but just to look at the facts, to understand what's happening in that aging brain, and try every way you can not to take it personally. And that's where you need maybe even to be in a support group or to talk to a pastor. Yes. So, hey, I'm not going crazy here, and it's not my fault she's mad at me, and this is the facts of what's happening in her brain are causing this, and I need to take care of myself and just realize who I am as a child of God, and that I'm doing the best I can. But that is a hard, hard season. It's a hard assignment for anybody, no doubt.
Yeah, give yourself the space to know that you're still the good daughter, the good son.
Yes.
Trying your very best to take care of this aging parent.
Yes.
And at the same time, you're grieving the mom or dad that you used to know.
Exactly.
And processing that and keeping your own attitude in a sweet place so that you can still field all of that.
Right.
Do you maybe even a timeout, give yourself a timeout for a break sometimes?
Oh, I think they do recommend that in terms of caregivers, respite care for caregivers, absolutely, because there are statistics that show that people who are involved in this kind of full-time caregiving, especially if maybe the parent lives in the home with them and it's 24/7. They have got to find time to even go for a walk and pray and be with friends. And in fact, that's something that all of us who are in this age group need to remember that we can do for our friends, because they may not ask, but just to say, would you like me to come stay with your mom one afternoon this week so you can go get your hair done and have a glass of tea, and because that's what helps them keep that healthy perspective that, okay, I'm okay. I'm still me. I'm not going to be used up and changed by this forever.
Okay. So let's change the mood here a little bit. Did anything funny ever happen?
Oh goodness. A lot of funny things happen. I had a lot of funny experiences. Taking my mother-in-law to the doctor, and some of them are a little too personal to repeat, but one time she was walking out, she'd gone just for a B12 shot, and so we're walking down the hall, and her physician passed her going the other way, and she muttered under her breath, "Well, I've got an appointment to see you later this month, but I don't know why." And he turned around and said, "Well, that's okay, I'll just see you at the hospital then." And she just went, But they knew each other's personalities and senses of humor, and so they could do that,
Have a little bit of fun along the way there.
Oh, yeah. And there are lots of of humorous stories in the book. I mean, I think in the tenser, more stressful times of life, and even in the chapter on letting go, I talk about humorous things that happen to people when, at the very end, when they're saying goodbye to their parent. And as hard and heartbreaking as that is, sometimes humorous things happen, and God provides that opportunity to relieve stress, to laugh together as well as to cry together sometimes, I think.
Laughter is good medicine is what they say.
It sure
so
is.
Included that in the book because we all
yes.
need a little of that to lighten our
That's
load.
That's for sure.
So if you had to do this all over again now, what would you do differently?
Oh, that's a great question, Maxine. Gosh, I think what we all wish is that we could see into the future, and of course we can't. Only the Lord knows our days are numbered. But for one thing, my mother-in-law moved into assisted living, but then was only there, less than 5 months before she passed away. And had we known it would be that short of a time, we really would have encouraged her just to move in with us so we could have had more hands-on care during that time. But it could have been 4 years or 5 years, and she really didn't want to be in this. She didn't want to impose herself, you know, and we didn't force it. So sometimes you look back and think, oh, golly, we could have done that. But there again, you have to get to the point where you have peace about it. And the Lord is so gracious to give us that peace that we loved, we laughed, we took their hand again, we did everything we could do based on the knowledge we had at the time. And that's all any of us can do in any of these seasons of life, whether it's parenting or helping our aging parents, whatever it is. We just need to rely on the Lord and do the best we can with what we know and what we have.
Okay, so you've got a chapter title about legacy as well. I've noticed that. And I'm a big legacy lover and promoter. So what would you say toward the legacy points that you're making in the book?
What I hope for everyone is that once these hard decisions about where to live and whether or not to drive, which we could talk about for an hour, that subject and a lot of hard things and funny things about that, but that there would be a time where, like my mom had in Tennessee, where she was really comfortable where she was and there wasn't as much stress, the decisions had been made. And then you can start having those gentle conversations when you visit about how do you want to be remembered? How do you want the grandchildren to remember you? And is there anything I can do to help you establish that legacy? And just letting them know that you're interested in far more than what material wealth they may be leaving behind. You know, that you want to make sure and maybe even record an oral history of their memories of their growing up years, or any topic really that you'd like to have their opinion on, and help them to think about whether they have any grudges they need to get rid of before they die, and then of course making sure that they have the spiritual support that they need, that they have come into a knowledge of faith and relationship with Jesus Christ, and that they can pass the legacy of that knowledge to their children and grandchildren, that peace, that they know where they're going when they die. That's a part of their legacy too. And I always tell people, don't go in with a 10 things on a list that you're going to talk to grandma about today. No, you know, you can't do it that way. That's too overwhelming. But just think about maybe one question you want to ask each time you go, or if you know there's been a long-standing family grudge, see if you can gently nudge them into writing a letter or making a phone call and forgiving, so that the legacy of forgiveness is there as well.
Well, Nancy, we are totally running out of time at this point.
Okay.
And I'm so glad you have joined us. What I am taking away is the fact that let's just be real in these families.
Oh,
let's speak
yes.
truth and speak it in love
yes.
and care for one another where there's no guilt left at the end. When
exactly.
the parent passes, you
exactly.
feel like you've done the best you can. And you are a wonderful example of that. Listeners,
and
I
say I love you. Say I love you a lot.
Yes,
yes,
say I love you a lot. And go pick up a copy of Take My Hand Again, written by Nancy Brummett, and visit her website at nancyparkerbrummett.com. Nancy, thank you so much for all you've done
thank
for
you,
the
Maxine.
Parents and
oh.
those caught in the middle of all that. God bless
oh,
you.
Oh, thanks for the encouragement. Same to you.
You're
thank
welcome.
You, Maxine.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.